Blog Talk Radio.
Hi. You have reached American Health Crisis through Blog Talk Radio. This is Colette Young speaking, one of the about incarceration of mentally ill people. Let them, the question I pose is, why are youth and adults with mental illness placed in prisons and or detention centers? Should all sectors of society be educated in the area of mental illness? So tonight's broadcast on American Health Crisis will feature Phyllis McNeil, who has lots of credentials. She has MSW behind her name. She's also the founder and CEO of Straight Talk Program Incorporated, and she'll be talking about that also, and it's for social justice. Straight Talk Program Incorporated provides solutions and services as a positive role model for the development of life skills, goal setting, and career choices. Join us tonight on American Health Crisis. I'm the host, Colette Young. We're also joined by Selena Cleta, and our guest is, one of the guests is Phyllis McNeil. And if anyone else is listening, if you want to talk, you have to call 858-769-4936 and press 1. Phyllis, why don't you go ahead and give them an introduction to who you are.
My name is Phyllis McNeil. I am the Dragon Slayer. I am the founder of the Straight Talk Program, which is a social justice program. We concentrate in prevention, intervention, and prevention and deterrent in educating people regarding the criminal justice system. I am a retired parole agent from the Department of Correction as of 2009. At Straight Talk, I birthed the program in 1990. And I have on panel with me is Jasper. You want to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Jasper Meza. Currently, I'm a union carpenter, but at one point in my life, I was incarcerated. I was involved in a traumatic experience in my life with my brother and some friends, and I'm here to help Phyllis talk about this program tonight.
Okay, great. Now we also have Selena Lindsay on the line. Do you want to introduce yourself, Selena?
Hi, I'm Selena Lindsay, and I am the CEO of a number of nonprofits. In addition to that, I am an entrepreneur, been around 30 years or more, and also a retired CPA.
Okay, if anyone has noise in the background, if you can silence it, then I'm sure. But it's being picked up because this is a live recording, and I need the backgrounds to be quiet so we can, you know, hear the people. Okay. All right, so what we're going to do is Phyllis is going to give us some of the problems with incarceration of mental illness, and she's going to also, some of it will be personalized, but and others will be generalized. We're going to talk about problems right now, and then we're going to, after a while, we'll talk about some of the solutions that has already been put in place. Okay. Why don't you go ahead and speak, Phyllis.
Okay. Working inside Youth Authority and also Department of Corrections prisons, I saw a lot of people come in and out of there with mental illness. Most of the people who are committed to the Department of Correction by doing a crime, most of them have a substance abuse problem with direct cause of mental illness, some form of mental illness. But when they get inside, if they don't have mental illness when they get inside, they do when they inside because of the way they're treated inside. Probably you guys are probably not aware, but some people have been locked in the hole, which is lockdown, solitary, for over 20 to 30 years. And one, I would say, it's a real small sale. And if you can get out of there in 30 years with your mind intact, you know, that's only by the grace of God. But that's how they treat it in there. It's a very traumatic experience once you're behind bars, things that goes on inside in the youth facility and as well as the adult facility. You know, we have a lot of things that goes on. We have, Jackie, you want to talk with some of the stuff that goes on that
I'm unaware. You said they'll put someone in a small cell for 30 years?
Yes, I have one guy that was in lockdown, solitary confinement, for 20 long years. That's a long time. They don't even, they're supposed to come out for 1 hour, but sometimes they don't even get out of the cell. They get out when the prison guard decides to let them out, and sometimes that might be a year, a month. They don't care. Their rights are being violated. They treat it, oh, my God, it's awful inside. If you have any relatives inside.
If you did an animal like that, you would be persecuted and fined. But you do a human being like that, I just think the public's totally unaware. I know I'm unaware.
Yeah.
Not that long of a time.
Oh, yeah. One of the guys, I said, yeah, 20 years. He was in confinement in a holding cell, really small, like a shoebox. It's so small, you're complete dark in there. You know, you're stripped of everything in there. No outside communication whatsoever. You don't get shower or nothing, you know. When they get ready, then they'll shower. It's a lot of torturing going inside. And then for their mind to be intact when they come out is only by the grace of God. Some of them lose their mind and they never get their mind right because they go through, just like the people go through in the people that come, the veterans, post-traumatic stress, they have that going on inside once they're released back in the population in the prison as well as in the community. They have severe mental illness. They're not properly diagnosed in there. If they are, they give them medication. Some of them are too medicated. They're walking around like zombies.
Yeah, I know. In Angela Davis' autobiography, she mentioned that.
And then when they get released in the community, they don't have any resources for mental health. You know, some of them need their medication. They're released sometimes without medication, and sometimes they don't get medication for maybe a month or 2 months, and without your psychotropic medication, you know, you're in the community and you're in a big, you know, from a little cell, from prison population into a big society. Sometimes they preserve these people that go get in trouble or they have mental illness, so they're not really at themselves in society.
Wow.
Yes. They need ongoing treatment while they're in there, some good treatment, some people with some compassion, not judging them, because they're so brutal in there. The prison guards, some of them, not all of them, but their name call them. They just terrorize them while they're in there, and sometimes there ain't nothing they can do about it. They'll talk about their mother, anything to provoke their behavior, to get them to get more time, to get them to get more lockup and solitary time. They do the same thing with the juveniles, too. People don't not aware of the juveniles are housed with adults, too. They have closed down a lot of California Youth Authority prisons for youth. They got them in with adults. They got them on separate yards so the adults can get to them anytime they want. And people just don't realize that because they closed down a lot of youth authority because they're looking at money versus at people's human life. They don't value people's human life. They look at a dollar. If they can save a dollar and lock you up with an adult, okay, they will do that.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay. You were going to say something about Jasper.
Jasper, you want to comment on it?
Oh, yeah. So about 10 years ago, 10 years ago I was just out of high school, and me and my brother got into an altercation with some other boys from another high school, and it was a really big incident in Whittier, California. And Then we got sent to jail. We went through the jail process, the fighting the case in court and doing all that. And then we got sent to prison. We went to Folsom State Prison. Now, I was never put in the SHU or put in a solitary confinement or anything of that sort, but just being in there with the guards treating you disrespectfully, with their own anger, they're taking it out on us. I remember stories of my brother just walking down the hall and they would pull him aside, and he's not gang affiliated, neither am I, but they would pull him aside and shove him up against the wall and just do crazy stuff. And just that stuff alone, it does impact you traumatically in your life. Speaking on mental illness and stuff, coming out of this whole experience 10 years ago, it was quite an experience. And then coming back out into the regular world, we didn't know how to cope with it. I myself didn't know how to cope with it, and I thought I came out like a normal person again, but the only people that really truly saw how I was acting was my family, and they said I was a different person as well as my brother. And the only way we could cope with it, since we didn't have psychiatric help or anybody to help guide us in the right steps, other than Phyllis, it was traumatizing, and the only way we coped with it was with self-indulging and partying and drugs and stuff, and that was the only way we could smother the hurt and the pain that we had went through while we were in there. Not only the guards were attacking or being physically and verbally abusive, but the people in there, it's just quite the experience. But coming back out into the regular world was very hard to adapt. It took about a year to adapt. So I was in there for a year, as well as my brother, and it took about a year to come out and kind of adapt back into the people that we were. I still have tendencies that I go through in my daily walk, having to try and figure out who I am, and it's been 10 years. And I was partying and just doing crazy stuff for the past 9 years, and 8 months ago I ended up giving my life back to God, and just in an instant, I'm with no joke, my life turned around. Like within
wow.
the snap of a finger, I was changed, and now I'm just chasing God, serving God, and just being healed every single day, walking a new life. No more drugs are in my life, no more partying, no more bad things of this world, but in a heartbeat, my life changed around. But it's very disturbing what you go through in there. It's very hard to adapt, but I can finally say now I'm better.
Well, congratulations, and thank God for Phyllis even having a program, Think Talk program incorporated. And you're living proof of when we have programs to help people when they come out, that it really helps a lot. Appreciate you sharing.
Yeah, it really did help, because I wasn't only able to share and vent what I went through inside. I was also able to help young children, like listen to me coming out of a good family, a Christian based family growing up. I always went to church, always surrounded by good people, but I just made that wrong decision. And, you know, it could happen to anybody. And I got thrown into the lion's den, and I came out, and Phyllis was here, and she helped me get through my parole, helped me speak to these kids, and just hopefully I touched one kid at every visit, touch their heart so they can hear and listen that it's not the thing to do and be involved in this crazy life, because it can mentally affect you, it can physically affect you. I'm just very thankful for who Phyllis is to me and how she's helped me.
If anyone else is on the line and you want to jump in, ask a question, or make a statement, feel free to do that. Now,
can I?
Yes. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Donna, and I just want to iterate on what I forget the gentleman's name was saying.
Jasper.
Phyllis. Oh, Jasper. I'm sorry. I've known Phyllis a long time. Phyllis was my parole officer, and she helped me a heck of a lot. I've been home since July the 16th, 1990,
wow.
And Phyllis has been my friend the whole time. She's helped me. I went out and spoken to kids. I've been on television. And it's not through the efforts of Phyllis. I wouldn't have made it either, Jasper. It was, she was there for me. I mean, you know, was my anchor. And she helped me along the way. And in doing so, Phyllis can tell you that through the years, we met so many kids in elementary school, high school, junior high school. One girl, I'll never forget, it was a school in Pasadena. And through our conversing with these kids in the auditorium, she came up after the program was done to say that she had been being molested by her father. You know, it opens up a gate where there's kids that have things that they're hiding.
Someone has a radio or TV on?
I've been on TV with Phyllis. I've been on radio with Phyllis. I've been through schools with Phyllis. I've been with Phyllis since the beginning with
uh-huh.
Straight Talk. I was one of her first people that she ever had on Straight Talk.
Wow.
And we traveled and traveled and traveled and traveled, you know, and nothing in return, not looking for anything, but we got results from kids. You know, kids felt comfortable enough to come and talk to us, you know.
Yeah. That alone is very comforting.
There, Phyllis was able to seek help for these kids, because you'd be surprised. They need to hear from
somebody. Got their radio on? Could they cut it off, please?
Could they cut their radio off?
These kids need to hear from somebody. You know, they need to hear from someone that. And like I said, Phyllis is there. She's there, and she can, you know, she's guided. I don't even know if she knows how many parolees she's guided, you know, and I don't even know what her success rate is, but I'm one of them. All I wanted to interject that is that I'm one of them.
Well, thank you, Donna. That's great.
Thank you.
Okay. If anyone else want to speak up, you can. Or if you have questions, you want to ask, you can ask those questions, too. Okay.
This is Philippa. I want to say that I met Phyllis 3 years ago at Fathers and Family Coalition of America, and she was a volunteer and I was a volunteer. And since that time, I have been a follower of Phyllis, and I have seen the work that she's done in the community in terms of making sure that speakers are available to talk to students, and that they're available to speak to the community. Plus, Phyllis has mentored quite a few people in terms of helping them get through the systems of outside in the community. And she's done a phenomenal work with the community in terms of this area. And she's done this with her own money.
Mm-hmm.
And not with grants and so on. So she's done all this work with her own money for the last 20 years. So she's to be commended, because she's made a huge impact in the communities in the Empire area, as well as in the Los Angeles County area and San Bernardino. So I do know that Phyllis has made a huge impact on young people as well as adults. And so I've worked with her, and I've helped her write letters and, you know, just do things that she might ask me to do for her, but she's a very giving person. So Straight
mm-hmm.
Talk has really made a huge impact on the communities.
Wow, what a blessing. So towards the end of the show, we'll give you numbers and things like that you can reach Straight Talk Program Incorporated for social justice. I know I'm losing my voice. I talk too much. Okay. Selena, did you have anything you want to say?
Well, yes, I can basically verify a lot of what they're talking about because a number of the different people in probation and also inside of the prison, they're in my family. One per se, he is sort of a director in the San Francisco area. And the second one was a deceased husband who worked in Whittier at the boys center there. A number of different lawsuits that happened that they would come home and talk about where an individual that was a youngster was literally beaten and thrown into a van without any seats or anything and was taken to a hospital and it ended up into a huge, huge lawsuit. And these kinds of things with the mental issues, because I believe a lot of people don't understand that technically, even on the outside, if a person is not about to take their life or take somebody else's life, as far as they're concerned, they're mentally okay. And so this stuff is perpetuated. And in the inside, I had a sister that was a nurse inside of the prison. And a lot of the various instances that they're mentioning, it goes on and on and on with adults being in the inside with basically children or somebody that's 15, 16 years old. And even say in the Chino area, it's so bad that even the guard ended up, they found him in the trash can a couple of times. It is a really, really serious situation. They don't get drugs. They're often in a holding tank, for a day and a half going through the process. And if these people were already on drugs that were for mental illness, they don't get them, and they don't get the same drug that they're supposed to be on after their process. And they're put in with all of the rest of the population instead of being separated. It is some serious issues that most of the public is totally unaware of. And in terms of youngsters, they just don't get it. Because of what I do with homelessness and with trying to provide housing, we get some really, really crazy situations in where technically, along with veterans, the real problem after either incarceration or being homeless or in some of these kids is mental. And there's nobody to deal with it. The social workers are what I call upper echelon. They don't want to have anything to do with it. What they want to do is process more or less to say welfare checks. The rest of it, go away somewhere. The public has no idea how these situations are dealt with and how their public tax dollars are spent.
And I want to say, you know, working inside the system, a lot of people don't know. You talk about segregation. It's inside the prison. The blacks have to sit on one row. The whites sit on one row. And the Hispanics sit on one row. But if you're a Hispanic from Southern California, you have to sit on a separate row. Northern Hispanic have to sit on a separate row. The others get to the back. And then you have to be careful. If you drink out of a fountain behind another race, that's been called a race riot. Now, they should correct that while they're inside, but the staff, you know, we pay a lot of money. They're condoning that. That's why they have all these problems. If they call a hit on you inside, another race, you're going to die, and you can't keep your eyes open all night long. So that's a lot of traumatic experience that these inmates go through. A lot of race card is played. The game is played in there, and the staff, they promote those type of behavior. They can stop that, but they don't want to stop it. They can't tell me they can't stop it. I worked in the youth authority. I saw how they sit in rows. I worked in the prisons and Department of Correction. I see how they promote those racial problems in there, race riots. They'll mix another gang member, a rival gang member inside a cell with another gang member, and that gang member come up, kill. Oh, well. And then they're hiding. It's a lot of stuff go on, and we those staff get big money. Department of Correction, those staff, they make some good salary. You better believe it. And for the work that they do and the treatment of these inmates, I had a rough as a staff member, especially when I birthed of the Straight Talk program, because I'm for what is right
you know, because I was once, I could have been in that system. You know, I'll talk about my background, and it's heavy, when the time permits, before we get off this air.
Oh, you can go ahead and do that now. Go ahead.
Okay, let me tell you why I started Straight Talk Program. I started Straight Talk Program because I came from one of the dysfunctional family. I mean, everyone in my family was sick, and I was sick too. I was a sick child. I was in special ed class, I guess, from maybe second grade all the way to sixth grade. I was a behavior problem. I was a violent person. I had mental illness because I was traumatized in my home. I got a PhD in being abused. I was sexually abused, psychological abuse, physical abuse. I was neglected. I became a runaway at about the age of 12 all the way up until 14. They told me that I would mount up to nothing. My mother talked about me, my biological mother. I was lower than a scumbag. But I really was worse than 15 kids in a classroom with baby kids, you know, without the medication, because I was a behavior problem. I'm not going to cover that up. But my mother didn't have the skills to deal with me. Plus, she was in an abusive relationship. All the men in her her life, they were just low-lifed. They beat her up. Violence was present in my home. I had no role model, okay? Drugs was present in my home. I grew up in a violent situation, so I got tired of running away. And by when I got in junior high school, I got a therapist at the age of 13, Sandra C. Lane, LCSW. She really helped me trying to get a grip of where I was going, where I was headed at. You know, she didn't let me talk about I was from a dysfunctional family. No, we want to talk about you, Phyllis. What is your core problem? Because I had some mental health issues. And then I ran away for the last time when I was 14 years old because I was placed in foster homes. But I knew it was going to be a good foster home out there. But the foster homes they put me in was just like being in jail. But I knew there was a good foster home out there, and I was not going to give up. So to make a long story short, at 14, I ran away for 28 days, and as a result of that, I got placed from foster care system, and I had a social worker, but she left me on the street for 28 days at 14. I'm not putting you anywhere. You're staying on the street. So I got tired. I went to turn myself in. I went to East Lake Juvenile Hall. Boom, I got a probation officer. Boy, you got to be careful where you go, because even with a probation officer, I've been in two systems, foster care, probation. My next system would have been in the youth authority or prison, because I was headed that way. I was self-medicating myself with alcohol, and pretty soon I was going to get into drugs. But I got help. I got into the Jacqueline Girls Home, and I met my dream mother. I kept praying that I would get into a good foster home, a good loving home, nurturing. And I got in there. My therapist at the time, she made a recommendation to the courts. She needs to be in a loving, nurturing home. She's going to do some testing. Oh, yeah, I did some testing. And that lady, Maxine McGinnis, my mom, she worked with me. I was a mess because I didn't straighten up overnight. But I did graduate from high school with honors. People tell me I would never graduate. But I kept the faith up because I knew. I kept praying. I didn't know the power of praying, but I prayed myself out of that family. And I never have been accepted into my biological family. Until this day, I try to be accepted, but I have to divorce them on a permanent basis. I said that because I suffer from a lot of mental illness from that, from all the traumatic experience and just putting all those negative thoughts in my head, you know, from the school system, my family, that I was nothing. I was lower than a scumball. And those negative thoughts got in my head, and I had a lot of mental illness from that. And then it traveled through my adult life. I got it dealt with, and then boom, I landed into a breakdown in about 1994 at my job because my coworkers kept harassing me, and I won a stress case against the Department of Corrections. So when I talk about mental illness, I know you got to change the mindset to deal with that mental illness, and you got to cooperate with your treatment and all that stuff. But I was a consumer of mental illness, but I don't have any more mental illness anymore because God got me through all those channels. And that's why I started Straight Talk Program, because at the age of 16, I wrote my goals down. My ambitions was to become a probation officer or work in the field of social services. And I became exactly what I wrote when I was 16. Only different, I became a parole officer versus a probation officer. So dreams and prayers do come true. And that's why somebody helped me, two community workers. And we have people out there are dedicated, genuine to help these kids and help adults. They can change lives out there. You know, they're on assignment for God. The people that helped me, my two guardian angels, Maxine McGinnis, my mom, Maxine McGinnis, that's my mom, and my therapist at the time. If it wasn't for those two guardian angels, I would be, like my family members, still sitting on that same mail cart, drugs or in prison because I was on my way. But we have to have committed people to help people. I used up all my retirement funds to fund this program, personal funds. I'm starting on the second generation of mentoring. I have a kid right now needs $500 by the 5th of March to get into law school. She's been accepted into law school, and she needs the $500 to hold her seat. She just graduated from a Christian college back in Texas. You know, I'm praying to God that somebody will write a check to Straight Talk so I can get it to her. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you need to be committed.
I mentor adults and I mentor kids because you don't get your problem fixed as a kid. It just travels right into adulthood.
Right.
And I have about 50 people on my mentorship.
Don't we start talking about Straight Talk Program Incorporated? Let's provide solutions. Start mention life skills, then we'll go to goal setting and career choices. What life skills are you giving the ones that are ending up, problem in society?
Well, first they have to identify that they have a problem. They have to get themselves into counseling to deal with whatever psychological problem they're having. They probably need a good therapist, and if they're on medication, they need to get a good psychiatrist that knows how to medicate themselves. Some people are over-medicated. We have to get in touch with their family, if their kids. Sometimes these parents drive these kids psychological damage these kids up. So that's one of the solutions, getting into some type of form of treatment.
So Straight Talk helps with those resources?
What'd you say?
Straight Talk programs, you help them get in touch with these, resources, the counselor,
yes,
psychiatrist, psychology.
Yes, we provide resources through the Straight Talk program. Yes.
Okay. Great. What about goal setting? How do you guys help with that?
Well, goal setting, I sat down and talked with my clients. I have people that, first of all, some of my participants never had any trouble with the law, with being incarcerated or any contact with law enforcement. So I have two groups on my program that I deal with. Some never had any problem. They're just in there that they want to help out, and some have. But what I do, I sit down them on an individual basis and see, meet them where they're at. Don't judge them. Don't try to label them. Let them have a voice and hear what they're saying. Be a listening ear to hear what they're saying and talk to the parents and whatnot. And like we want A and B kids, I'm looking for A and B parents.
Wow. Okay, and then with the career choices, what are you doing?
Well, with career choices, we got people in the Straight Talk program. I have one guy. I sit there and see what they want to do. I got some kids in getting their master's and the master's program in different studies. I got one of my mentees got his PhD from Laurel Marymount. So I see where they want to go, and I try to get them funding, like scholarships and whatnot, so they can go ahead with their career choice. Some kids Jasper, he went on into a vocational trade. And I sat there and talked to him. He graduated. And now he has a good job. So I get to see what the kids are interested in, or the adults. And I find resources to connect them in the community. Or either they might want to get a job or something. I have to see what they're interested in to further their career development, their career choice.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. But it takes money. And,
you know, for books and stuff out there. You know, I got a kid that was, I have one kid right now. She's going to be graduating with her MSW. I have one licensed therapist. You know, we're talking about some heavyweights in Straight Talk program. I mean, I've been really, with my volunteers, we've been really doing some hard labors. And I got a very success rate, high success rate in academics and, you know, higher education and vocational trades.
So do you point them towards volunteering their time also? Or
Yeah, the people in my program, we give back. You know, we have the people I mentor, my participants that go out and talk. They volunteer their time in the community. They go out and share their testimony. The people that hire up with their education, they come back to help out as well. Mm-hmm.
So are you in various school districts?
Yeah, I service the counties of Los Angeles all the way to San Bernardino County as well. I do the mentoring, also do school presentations. I do workshops. I go to churches and talk. It's all about testimony sharing. People can get, you give them hope when people hear where you came from, where they, you know, they can identify, and you give them hope. You inspire them. Hey, if I got through all this traumatic experience and psychological experience, how bad you want it? You know, you got to be determined. You got to be determined, motivated, and I try to motivate them, give them hope. Build them up where they're at. You know, don't look at their weak point. You know, let's balance it. Let's work on their strength.
Wow. What is your success with your program?
My success rate is running about 85% right now. Most of the guys and ladies that get out of prison, they don't go back. I very have people go back in and out of that revolving door. To be on Straight Talk, even if you have a criminal record, you can't go in and out of the system. So I motivate them. You don't have to go back. If you do, that's your choice. I have a very high success rate. I have the youngest one on my mentorship program. He's just 3 years old. I teach the 3 years old how to be responsible. And the youngest speaker I had go out in the community, he was 9. Somebody said, what did he do? I said, he didn't do nothing. People on my program, they're not all went into that revolving door. I have some type of law enforcement contact. I had a little 9-year-old spoke to a kid, I mean, to an adult in a church setting at Save Our Son, a prison ministry in Los Angeles. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Phyllis, why don't you go ahead and give your contact information if someone wants to get a hold of Straight Talk Program Incorporated. Is this a nonprofit organization or what?
Yes, it's a nonprofit. I have my 501c. If anybody want to do any donation, you can go right to my website. My website address is www.sforstraight.tfortalk.pforprogram.ifinforNancyCForChild.oForOxRForRobertGForGod. Okay, that's my website. My Straight Talk phone number, 951-272-5747. Straight Talk is in need of paid staff because Straight Talk has been around for 29 years. That's a long time. I have given every penny I have to keep the doors open. Now I'm crying out to the community. I was a community raised kid. You know, it takes a village to raise a kid. It took 2 villages to raise me. And I'm telling people in the community, if you have, you know somebody, you know, you got money, you got a checkbook, you can put some money right back in Straight Talk so we can keep these services, these social services program going and helping these people. Like I said, I have a little kid right now, just graduated from a Christian college. I mentor her mother, so this is the second generation. Her mother was 11 years old when she walked through the door. And this is her oldest child. It just graduated last May, and she needs the funding to go to law school. She's been accepted. She is a motivator. She's driven. You know, anybody's listening, want to donate her law school for the whole time that she's going to go, it's going to cost her $200,000 for to complete her JD. And she will be giving back time and Straight Talk. She comes from a teen mother, so there's no excuse. She comes from a teen mother, and this is this teen mother got married to the father in high school, and they have three lovely kids, including her. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, thank you very much, Phyllis. And also, Selena Lindsay is on the line. She has a wealth of different places that she is involved in and community services that's much needed. And she's going to let us know how you can contact some of those places also. Okay, go ahead, Selena.
Okay, number one on the list is VeteranCareSolutions.org. VeteranCareSolutions.org is run by LaShonda Jones. She can be reached at area code 909-329-8288. The next organization is one that's always a princess. It's called Sick and Tired of Being Sick and Tired. This organization is run by Kathy Braxton, and they're located at 290 East D Street in Copeland, California. You can reach Kathy at area code 562-313-0041. Primarily what they do at Sick and Tired is they help direct people to resources that can help them with it, rent, with food, with counseling. Again, you can call them at area code 562-313-0041. The next organization is called Sowing Seeds for Life, and you can go to the website, which is sowingseedsforlife.org. This is an organization in which I am a director. Also, Paulette is there doing healthcare consulting. Sowing Seeds for Life is the second largest food bank in Southern California. Our motto there is that no child, no person should go hungry. We do a lot more than food. We do shoes, clothes, counseling. There are just a number of different programs that go on all year long. Again, that website is sowingseedsforlife.org. If you'd like to donate or come by to volunteer, please call our number, which is 909-293-7735, extension 232, and ask to speak to Fran Robinson. The next organization is called Coley's Outreach, and this organization is run by Mr. Keith Coley. This program is primarily for those that are on parole and that need a place to stay. You need consulting with to be able to find a place or to find a job. Please call Keith Coley at area code 909-358-7391. The next organization is called Bright Prospect. Bright Prospect is located at 1460 East Hope Boulevard, suite number 74 in Pomona, California. They can be reached at 909-623-9007. Bright Prospect is primarily organized to help low-income students to be able to get through college. You can go to their website, which is www.brightprospect.org. The next organization is called Helping Hands in Caring. That organization is located at 909-730-5313. If you'd like to donate to any of those organizations, please feel free to do so. At the closing of every radio show, I always state my own
opinion.
Don't
close it yet. I want to make sure that people realize that that conference is coming up. Fathers and Family Coalition of America has their conference coming up March 4th to 7th. That's coming next week. If you want to be a part of that, you can go to their website. It's Fathers and Families Coalition of America.org. It's going to be held at the Hilton Los Angeles Airport Boulevard. But you can sign up. All you have to do is go to their website. It's their 20th annual Fathers and Family Coalition of America Conference. People are coming from all over the globe because the same problems we have here in America have in all countries throughout. We're not unique in having our problems. They go everywhere. Okay, go ahead, Lena.
Okay,
oh,
this is our
phone. Phyllis, did you want to add anything else? Or?
Oh, yes, I do. I am a member of Fathers and Families Coalition, and it's a good conference. If you go there, you're going to love it. So if anybody can go to the conference, I encourage that. I'm also connected with Save Our Son in L.A. area at the Crenshaw United Methodist Church. It's a prison ministry. They do support families that are dealing with their kids being or their adult or loved ones are incarcerated. Every third Sunday, we meet at Crenshaw United Methodist Church from 2:30 to 5 o'clock. And that address is 3741 Don Felipe Drive, Crenshaw United Methodist Church, that's in Los Angeles. The phone number to the office church is 323-292-0414. They have people, professional people coming in, volunteering their time, giving back to the community, giving seminars every month on the third Sunday. So please call that church office and people that's out there in the Los Angeles area, San Bernardino, everybody's open to the public, and we address all different types of issues. They bring in a lot of resources to help these people who are coming home from prison and help our community as well. And I've also been a member for 20 years there, volunteering my expertise in the areas where they utilize my expertise in Straight Talk as well.
Great.
And I do have a donation button on my website, so anybody that want to write the check, your check and your money be well spent. You know, that's why I say we need money to keep the doors open.
Yes. Okay. All right, we're going to wrap things up right now, or Selena always wraps it up at the end. Go ahead. Wait, I should have asked, did anyone else that's on the line right now have anything they wanted to reveal about the incarceration and mentally ill people or children or adults? Okay, if not, okay, Selena, go ahead.
Okay, this is the closing, and this is my little statement. We are pro-poor, interacting with the poor in a way that provides choice and dignity. I have a belief in fishing rods rather than fish, and my belief is also implementing sustainable environmental practices. I believe that changing all of this and changing behaviors that contribute to poverty. I am Selena A. Lindsay. We thank you for listening to this broadcast. We look forward to having you again at our next broadcast. Please have a great evening. Good night.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Oh, thank you, Jasper. Thank you, Phyllis.
You're welcome.
Philippa Johnson, thank all of you for being a part of this broadcast. I know it's going to help someone out there. Thank you.
Before we leave, can I end with my dragon statement?
Yes, you can. Go ahead.
Okay, the dragon statement, that's why I call myself the Dragon Slayer, founder of the Straight Talk program. I must see that the love and community support is not broken. Each one of us go through the journey through life, have our own obstacles and sticking points. The difference in each one of us is how we face our personal monster. Do we run from the cruel beast, or do we become a dragon slayer? Now, the cruel beast could be yourself, could be anybody that you look at as a cruel beast. But we can't run. We got to stand up and slay that dragon.
Like that.
And then I want to say one more thing before I go. One of our verses that we live by in Straight Talk is Romans 12, verse 2 for the New Living Translation. Do not copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. It's all about a mind change, changing your mind. Once you change your mind, you're on your road to success. That's what happened to me, and that's what I still in the people that didn't straight talk. We got to let go of the past and look for the future. Don't hold on to the past. That will not let us go forward in life. We got to have a forgiving heart, compassion for others, love one another, love your enemies. That's what my mom taught me, the great Maxine McGinnis. Love, even your enemies. It took me a long time to get there. Have a forgiving heart. That's it for the Dragon Slayer.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we'll see everyone again next Monday for those with another hot topic. Bye-bye.